This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. And Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Somebody wants to talk about World War II, dog fights, cups of coffee. We're going to talk about killers, these killers who write everything down, the manifestos, my political arc, if you will, all that and so much more coming up on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. I'm going to get to this one right off the bat. Jesse, what is the deal with writing a manifesto? Manifesto. Why do killers write a manifesto describing why they're going to commit mass destruction or murder? Is this something they learned to do in college or something? Why bother with a manifesto? I'm just curious. Okay. So there is something that is very, very real for all human beings. This is about all of us, you and me and everybody. People want to feel heard. They want to feel important in some way. I don't mean necessarily fame or something like that, but all human beings, all of them, men, women, children, they want to feel like they have a voice. They want to feel some amount of power. Some amount of power of control over the things in their lives. And if you manipulate that in really, really terrible ways, you can end up with what happens with so many of these mass shooters, so many of these killers. You see, Columbine, it's something, if you're young enough, you weren't even alive, because this was so many years ago. Chris, wasn't Columbine the 90s? I forget. I'm pretty sure it was the 90s. But anyway, I was a kid when Columbine happened. I was young anyway. And Chris said 99. Okay, yeah, it was the year I graduated high school was Columbine. Now, again, it's so weird because our world has changed so much in the last 26 years. Before Columbine, it's not as if there wasn't ever a mass shooting, but it really was almost unheard of. It was almost completely unheard of. It just is not one of those things that happened. And then, after Columbine, they're all the time now. Let's be honest, it's every year. There will be generally multiple a year with various degrees of death, right? But there are multiple a year. What happened? Well, a really horrible, toxic stew of things happened at once that has created this mass shooting culture. So we're not going to go into all of it, the medications they're on, and I'm not even going to go into the communist aspect of it. I'm going to set all that stuff aside here. One of the worst parts of it was the Columbine school shooters were made instantly famous. Instantly. I could tell you right now, and I will not, even though you already know it, I could tell you their names off the top of my head right now. Because after that horrible school shooting, it was such a shock. I'm not even blaming the media or anyone on the left or right. It was such a shock. It was such a sea change. Wait, a bunch of school kids got mowed down by their classmates? It was such a shock that it was all the news could talk about. And I was a young man, right? A teenager, 17, 18 years old. It was all you could see on the television forever. It seemed like for a year. You would see their names. You would see their faces. They had the pictures of them up. They would be interviewing the victims and talk about the parents. Those guys became famous immediately. Well, now let's talk about how twisted up and evil you have to be to decide you want to murder other human beings, oftentimes indiscriminately. you are angry, for maybe you are bullied, I will always believe most often that these people are demon-possessed in some way. Demons are real. When you read a story about a mother drowning her babies in a bathtub, almost universally she will talk about the voices in her head telling you to do so. Those are demons, right? I believe that it's, again, a mixture of a bunch of things. You hate your life, you're angry, you're whatever, and now you want to hurt people. Well, not only do you want to hurt people, this publicity culture we have now, it gives you the ability to hurt people publicly, and to get famous for it. Now, if you're some mentally ill, demonic loser who hates everything, you've decided to become murderous, you decided you want to murder people, being famous, even if it's famous in death, even if it's fame you will never see, being famous, it's very, very appealing. And maybe you're the type of person, before the fame came with it, maybe you're the type of person who wouldn't have actually gone through with it. Yeah, you hate your classmates or your teacher or your mom or whatever it is. And yeah, you want to kill them, but you didn't have the little nudge to push you over the edge to do it. Time after time after time after time after time, we see this now. They write it down. They talk about it. They want to do it. They end up doing it. The final nudge is the fact that they will become known and famous. And even if you say to yourself right now, well, yeah, but they're so common, you'll only be famous for 24 hours and then everyone will forget. That's 24 hours longer than that person has felt relevant and important for the entirety of their lives. For 24 hours, people will know their names. And it's why I have a rule and I try the best I can to stick with it. I am not perfect. I know I've screwed it up in the past. I don't say their names. I do not do it. I have always believed that that should be a national policy. I'm not going to say a national law because you really don't want to start making laws about things like that. I think it should become an understandable part of our culture where everybody, top to bottom, major news organizations, you on social media, blogs, you name it, I think there should be an embargo on naming these people because that is the difference. That's why it ramped up. The first guys who did it in Columbine got mega famous and got mega famous for a long time. And if you're at home and you feel like you have nothing to lose and you're demonic and you get your hands on a weapon, well, one day's worth of fame while taking out all that anger can make the difference. And that's why they write everything down, too. They want you to know. They want you to find these things. They want you to find their notebook, their manifesto. I'm mad at my dad. I'm mad at this Christian school. I'm mad at Republicans. I'm mad at... They want you to know it. And they want it read aloud on CNN at night. It's what finally pushes them over the edge to do it. You would have a fraction, a tiny fraction of the school shootings if these kids didn't get famous for a day. But I don't want to say society today, because society has always been this way. Every period of time in history is the same way. If it bleeds, it leads. That's what they say in the media. Feel good stories. You know, every single local newscast in the country, I guarantee you have a local news station in your area that tries this. Every newscast tries to do a once a week. It's Feel Good Fridays. And they'll highlight some lady who works at a soup kitchen handing out her famous biscuits every and let's introduce Gwen and stuff like that. You know what? It's the lowest rated thing they do all week, every single time. Because we human beings, we want to see the bombs and the bullets and the blood. The tragedy. It's part of how we're made. I'm not absolving myself from that. We were supposed to go see a movie later on tonight, that new Christian movie, King of Kings. It's supposed to be wonderful. I've heard it's really wonderful. Hey, Chris, you going? No, I'm kidding. But we were supposed to go see King of Kings later on tonight. Ob got the flu, so now we don't have to go. I'm thrilled about it. Why? No one's getting shot. And it's a great movie, right? It's a good message. And you should go see it. And I will go see it because I want to give them my business. I just can't do it tonight because Ob is sick. But I don't want to go see a movie about Jesus. I want to go see, I think there's a new movie out called Warfare. I know there's a movie out called Working Man where a good guy who knows a bunch of special forces stuff ends up murdering a bunch of bad guys. Blood. That's what I want to see. I'm guilty. Pointing fingers right here. That's who we are. And so the news, when one of these things happen, they love it. Because you love it. Because I love it. And that's the sadness of it, right? Let's get off of that. Let's talk about dog fights, my political journey, many, many other things still to come. Let me talk to you about your weekend. What are you going to do? You're going to have some family time this weekend. After all, it's Easter, Chris. You're going to have some time. What if you got the kids together, or maybe just did this by yourself, depending on what you got going? What if you started the Understanding Capitalism course from Hillsdale College this weekend? I'm not even asking you to get up from the couch or get off your phone. Do it on your phone. It's online. Hillsdale College has more than 40 free online courses. Go try one. Understanding Capitalism will teach you about how human nature plays a role in it. Private property rights, the rule of law, why it's a system that actually encourages morality. Understanding Capitalism is a critical tool to have in your tool belt when you are wading through the muck of this culture. Go learn. It's only 7 lectures. Go. There's no cost. Why wouldn't you do it? Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, a fantastic Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. You can still email us your love, your hate, your death threats, your Ask Dr. Jesse questions. We're live here, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. And remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Hey, Jesse, quick question about World War II dog fights. What are your thoughts?
I don't know why you would ask me about flight and things like that when you should be asking Gail King.
And I'm so proud of us. I really am proud of me because I never in a gazillion years thought I could do this. And I just saw a video of us walking up the, I don't want to call it plank, but what's the proper?
You got to trust in yourself on this journey, and then you're feeling the love when you come down, for sure, and you're feeling that strength. So I feel really connected to that strong divine feminine right now.
I sailed on my first try. I just let the boat do the work. That was my secret.
I'm sorry. It's never going to stop being funny. Anyway, all right, so I don't have a lot of thoughts on dog fights. Actually, I take that back. I have tons of thoughts on dog fights, but I am not a pilot, okay? So I need to stress that I am not a pilot. But I am, however, a dude who's obsessed with warfare, like every other dude is. And one thing that I have learned is there's a lot that goes into this stuff. I have I'm going to see how delicate I can be answering this question. I have somebody I know very well who is a current fighter pilot. Like a big boy type. And to hear him discuss it is fascinating. And we were having to talk about this, about who wins, who doesn't win, and stuff like that. And in fact, we were talking about different kinds of jets. We were discussing our new F-35 versus this jet or that jet. And he said, you know what F-35 buys me? I said, what? He says, about a quarter of a second. And I said, okay, so you're not that impressed? He said, no, a quarter of a second's everything. A quarter of a second's me winning and you die. It buys me time you don't have, and a quarter of a second is the difference between me being alive and you dying. So I'm actually going to, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a podcast
that's not even mine that I'm warning you now, it might bore you, but you might nerd out on it. Elon Musk, who you obviously know, Elon Musk is brilliant beyond belief when it comes to flights and engines and rockets. He's just one of these types, okay? You know who Dan Carlin is? Dan Carlin does a bunch of history podcasts. Maybe you've listened to him, maybe you haven't. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But Dan Carlin, I can't point to you. I can't give you a link because I don't know it. I don't have it in front of me. So don't email me asking me to do the work for you. Go find it. Dan Carlin did a podcast with Elon Musk. And their topic of discussion was, it was actually about World War II planes and things like that. And if you're not a reader, I prefer to read this stuff, but if you're not a reader and you want something kind of fed to you audibly, which you probably enjoy, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to me. Go download that. It's free. If I remember right, it's free. At least it was. They describe things, or Elon really does the heavy lifting, but describing things that I honestly didn't even think of before. There are planes, there are engines that do really, really well up until they get too high, and then they don't do well at a certain altitude. There are planes that do better when they're diving versus planes that can only rise so fast, like little things that non-pilots like me, again, I know I'm the layperson. I know we have a bunch of pilots who actually listen, commercial airline pilots and fighter pilots, so don't email me and yell at me because I'm an idiot. I know I don't know. But there are more things that go into it than you can imagine. This plane was great, but at a certain point, it wouldn't work well if you were trying to do this with it because it couldn't dive at that angle. And they'll just talk endlessly. You can nerd out about the different types of planes, the different engines. Why was this one great? Why did this one usually beat this one, but this one lost to that one? I will compare it in this way. Very, very, very much to a styles make fights type thing, like an MMA, a UFC type thing, where one guy, maybe his style is just uniquely tailored to beat the guy across from him, but he can't beat the next guy who isn't necessarily better. He just has a different style. So there's all kinds of different planes and wild things. But also there's a second part of this, which I really love. Pilot skill seemed to be, from everything I've read on it, 75% of it. 60-75% of it. Have you ever, remember these Medal of Honor citations we do every Monday? We've done ones on pilots before, and the numbers are a little eye-popping sometimes, right? When you see, wait, one of our fighters went up and he just shot down six planes? What were they all doing? He would just charge. Our pilots would just charge. One guy who would charge 20 planes, and he wouldn't even die. I mean, a lot of our guys did die, but wouldn't even die. He just mowed through 6-7 guys. He was so much better than the pilots he was facing. So much more experienced because America had a really, really, really smart training cycle. We would take our best pilots, and instead of leaving them out there till they die, we would cycle them back into America to train the next generation with all that experience. We just had better pilots, and we would just mow through the other side. Mow through the other side. Anyway, those are my thoughts on dogfighting. Let's talk about Congress and coffee next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Before I get back to the questions, Jewish producer Chris brought up the Medal of Honor citation we read one time for Marine Corps pilot in World War II Pacific, James Elms Sweat. And I thought, even though it's not Monday, I thought just to kind of prove a point about the fighter pilot thing, I thought maybe we should do a little mini Friday edition. What do you think? Hey. Oh, by the way, man is still alive to this day. Chris said he's over 100. 102? He's 102, Chris? Chris, he's actually dead. Did I just announce to everybody on live radio that the man is alive and he's dead? Chris, he died in 2009, so he's been dead for a long time. It's like he's not even a little bit dead. It's not like they can pull out the paddles and shock him back to life. He's actually been dead for almost two decades. And I just told everyone he was alive. This is what I work with here. Right.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
This is for a James Elms Sweat, born in Seattle, Washington. Also, he's dead. For extraordinary heroism and personal valor above and beyond the call of duty as division leader of Marine Fighting Squadron 221 with Marine Aircraft Group 12, 1st Marine Aircraft Wing, in action against enemy Japanese aerial forces in the Solomon Islands area, 7th of April, 1943. In a daring flight to intercept a wave of 150 Japanese planes, 1st Lieutenant Sweat unhesitatingly hurled his four-plane division into action against a formation of 15 enemy bombers and personally exploded three hostile planes in midair with accurate and deadly fire during his dive. Although separated from his division while clearing the heavy concentration of anti-aircraft fire, he boldly attacked six enemy bombers, engaged the first four in turn, and, unaided, shot down all in flames. Exhausting his ammunition as he closed to the fifth enemy Japanese bomber, he relentlessly drove his attack against terrific opposition, which partially disabled his engine, shattered the windscreen, and slashed his face. In spite of this, he brought his battered plane down with skillful precision in the water off Tulagi without further injury. The superb airmanship and tenacious fighting spirit, which enabled 1st Lieutenant Sweat to destroy seven enemy bombers in a single flight, were in keeping with the highest traditions of U.S. Naval Service. And I believe, if memory serves me, that it was actually some tribesmen, some natives in canoes who went and got him. An underrated, I bet you there are good books written about this. I've only read books that weren't about it, who talked about it. An underrated part of World War II in the Pacific were all these islands. The Japanese would take over all these islands, but they didn't own every square inch of the island. There were oftentimes tribal peoples, tribes who were on the island who didn't like the horrible Japanese oppression, because you can imagine how the Japanese would treat tribal peoples when they ran into them, and they would aid the various British and American guerrilla fighters. They would give us information. They would rescue our guys. They would. I mean, it's a really cool part of World War II. I'm surprised they haven't made a movie over something like that. Oh, well, Hollywood would probably screw it up anyway. Jesse, I know you grew up Republican, but not overly political, and later ran for Congress as a conservative. But at what point did you finally get the whole picture and become a true anti-communist? How did this transition happen for you? I know you're mentally slow, so it gives me hope for others. Just kidding. Thanks for sharing your experience. Okay, so here's kind of my story for those who are new to the show, and I realize there are many that are new to the show. So, like he said, I did not grow up in a highly political household. We were just a construction family. That's all we did. We were patriotic, though. There was always that aspect to it. And as I've said, the only political conversation I can ever remember having with my parents was I asked my dad once when I was, I think it was kindergarten,
hey, are we Democrats or Republicans? And he said, we're Republicans. And that's the only thing he ever said. Okay, that's the way it went. But we weren't hugely political. I have always been a history freak, even as a child, a small child. I was that nerd reading books. I love to read. I've always loved to read, hoovering up as much of that stuff as I could. And joined the Marines. Still not hugely political. I'm a Republican at this point, but still not hugely political. I get out of the Marines after 4 years. Still not hugely political. I go back to work in construction. I'm working out of town. I'm working in a place called Ajo, Arizona, AJO, this tiny little town. We're living in Tucson, Arizona at the time, Aub and I. And I have all this extra time on the road, all this time on the road. So I'm driving out of town. I've got this construction job. So I start consuming books on tape and more political radio just because it happened to be on at the time. And I start consuming this stuff and I start to feel obligated to get involved politically. That's really what really sparked my interest in it. I didn't like what was happening to the country. I really did not like Barack Obama, and I wanted to get involved. So I ran for Congress twice out of nowhere. I'd never been in office. I'd never run for anything, but I was just mad. Turns out I wasn't bad at it. I won the Republican nomination twice for Congress. Can you believe that? I almost won the actual congressional seat. It was 4,000 votes separated Gabrielle Giffords and I. So it was this huge political run. Why? After I get done losing, I went back to D.C. for a year, worked in politics for a year, hated living in that rude blue dump, and I moved to Texas and just kind of walked away from politics, really completely for the most part. I still followed it and read and stuff like that, but I was selling RVs. I was just, this is my last job before I started doing this, just in the regular civilian world, trying to pay the bills and make ends meet, same way you're doing. I kept getting angrier and angrier at really both sides, to be honest with you, at the destruction of the country, about how they would just tear through everything and spend all this money and do all these nakedly corrupt things. I got so angry that I couldn't freaking stand it. And then if you're asking how I came from more of a traditional conservative to hardcore anti-communist, I don't think that's a big adjustment, by the way. I don't know that I moved that much. If you look at old videos of young Jesse running for Congress, he said the same thing back then. It was 20 years ago. Well, 15 years ago. Said the same stuff back then I say now. I haven't changed that much. But what I did wake up to was this. For the longest time, I'd kind of gone along with the traditional notion that they're just misguided. They're just misguided. Sure, there are some bad people, but they're just naive. This one's just misguided. They're not this. But that didn't add up. After a long enough time, it didn't add up that they were just misguided. So I decided to, in my own life, and you can do this, I decided to test something. It's good to test things. This was my test. Okay. If I, instead of thinking they're misguided, if I think they're evil and they're destroying things on purpose, does that offer a better explanation for what I'm seeing? And as soon as I got to that point, what if I just assume that they're intentionally destroying everything they touch? As soon as I put that to the test, it was like scales fell from my eyes. It was obviously intentional. It wasn't a whoopsie. It wasn't an accident. These people really genuinely don't like America, and they really do think they're the good guys by trying to destroy it. That's how Democrats think. I'm sorry. That's how I got here. Let's move on. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and I can't believe I have to have this conversation before I get back to the emails, but Jewish producer Chris during the break, I thought he was doing a bit for a minute, but he wasn't doing a bit. Remember during the last segment when I said the scales fell from my eyes? On my life, Chris asked me what that meant. What does that mean? What does that mean? I don't understand what it meant. Chris, allow me to explain, because there is this thing out there that you might be unfamiliar with, and no, I'm not talking about shellfish. It's called the New Testament, Chris. Okay? So now listen, I'm just explaining how it's going. There was a man by the name of Saul. No, Chris, no, you don't get to do the I know thing now. Now, Saul, he didn't like Christians, and he was participating in the murder of Christians. Saul was eventually struck with blindness by God himself, and then, after an encounter, the, quote, scales fell from his eyes, and he could see again. I won't go into the whole, you know, after he ran into an encounter. Well, the encounter happened, then he got blind, and then he had to go do this thing, and then the scales fell from his eyes. How do you not know this story? Even though you're a Jew, how do you not know this story? Everyone knows this story. Oh, the scales in his eyes don't make any sense? Do you think that's maybe too far for God? I think that he can put whatever... I don't know what kind of biblical interpretation. Maybe he had cataracts, okay? I don't know, Chris. I'm not the God of the universe. Maybe I can ask him one day, okay? Jesse, you pride yourself on being the menu whisperer and definer of what is good, bad, and disgusting, yet you have no affinity for good or bad coffee. You might even think it's possible not to tell the difference. I don't want you to buy commie coffee, but I challenge you to buy an Americano from Starbucks, basically a cup of coffee. If you can't agree with me that it's the worst cup of coffee you will ever drink, then you could probably drink battery acid just fine. His name is Lance. Look, here's my only experience with an Americano. I don't know what it is, okay? And the last time I had to go get my car serviced, they have a coffee machine in there. And I went up to the coffee machine, and it was one of those big fancy ones the coffee places have where you put the cup under it, and then you have to pick what kind you want on the screen. And it was all weird stuff. It was all, would you like an espresso, a mocha pato, a batatito, or whatever? And I just wanted a cup of coffee, okay? That's all I wanted is a cup of coffee. And I turned to the woman who was restocking the Cheetos, and I said, "Lady, how do I just get a cup of coffee from this machine?" Because there was no button that just said coffee. And she said, "Oh, that's an Americano." And so I beep, beep, beep. I pressed the button. If that's coffee, count me out. It was awful. Absolutely awful. What, Chris? Americano is a watered down espresso. Well, it's not coffee. It's not coffee, right? That doesn't count. Chris, are espresso beans and coffee beans different beans? They're not different beans. The same beans. Look at how smart I am. I'm learning so much now. You and your stupid coffee grinders. Hey, Jesse, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons? I've wondered this too. Because it wouldn't make sense that they do have belly buttons. But here's the problem with it. I don't think we're ever going to find out. No, hear me out. We get to heaven, and obviously God's going to be pretty understanding. I have questions. I want to know how big the dinosaurs really were. I want to know things. Am I allowed to fly? Like, I want these important things. But you know what I don't think is going to be appropriate? Strolling up to Eve and saying, "Hey, I want to see. What? You can't do that. Well, Adam will probably be right there. What, Chris? What? Chris has said, "Who's to say she's not still wearing leaves?" She's going to be covered up, Chris. It's heaven, okay? Not Mardi Gras, all right? She's going to be dressed appropriately in heaven. She's going to be covered. And now, what if you pass Eve in the chow hall every morning? I'm going to wonder. And, you know, and then you're going to have to... Then you look creepy. You're always looking down at Eve. There's no way to ask that of somebody and not have it be awkward. Now, maybe because God understands everything, maybe he will understand immediately. I understand you all have questions, so I have asked Eve to come in today to do a little reveal to see, to show you what she has and what she doesn't have. There's nothing creepy about this, but I don't want your questions to remain out there. I believe that God would maybe do that. If he doesn't, someone's going to have to ask her. And I think we all know who that someone's going to be. It has to be me. Who else is going to do it? You going to do it, Chris? You would never do it. Corey would never do it. It has to be established. You know what the right move is? Here's the right move. You get to know Adam. Get to know Adam. He's probably cool. He's been around longer than anybody else. He's probably cool. He's going to have all, think of the stories Adam's going to have. You go get to know Adam. Maybe you start a cornhole tournament with Adam. He'll be on my team and we'll just be sitting there, couple beers, if we're allowed to do that, couple beers. And hey, so Adam, me and the fellas have been wondering, and there's nothing inappropriate about this at all. We just want to know, belly button, is Eve a yay or a nay on it? And is it an innie or an outie? If she has one, is it like a normal one where there's a little hole there? Or is there one of the kind of weird little buttons on it? I don't know. I couldn't imagine. Why would she have one? Chris, what are you making that face for? I don't know. We have to figure things out, Chris. It's Friday. I've already figured out my favorite cell phone company. Have you? Pure Talk's the best. Pure Talk not only saves me a fortune, Pure Talk, they don't ever spend my money on things I hate. Now, that's the problem with corporate America today. Now that it became infected with all this cultural Marxist filth, corporate America takes your money and then they do corporate social responsibility. Maybe the three most evil words in the English language. What corporate social responsibility means is we will take a portion of our profits and spend it on some disgusting left-wing cause, meaning you and me, we fund. That latest drag parade, you notice they all have corporate funding? Go look at the list. And then ask me, are you happy you have Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile? Switch to Pure Talk. It's easy. You keep your phone. You keep your phone number. You save a fortune. It's time. Look, it's time. It's the weekend to do it. Pick up that cell phone and dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. All right. Let's talk about sending your kids to college. The Minoans, Cheddar Bay Biscuits, and more. Hang on.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.